and welcome everybody, and thanks for dialing in, and it would probably be nice for everybody if we could just do a quick round of introductions. So my name's Jane Runicles. I'm one of the clinical leads on this project with Alice, and I'm a paediatrician at the Royal Free. Alice, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Alice Ruchet. I am, again, jointly doing this with Jane, but I'm also a general paediatrician at Evelina in London. How about Chris next?
Hi, I'm Chris Kelly. I'm a ST3, I suppose, trainee in North London, currently out of program doing a PhD at Tommy's as well, at the Evelina as well.
Brilliant. And then I can see on the list Brian. Brian, can you hear us? Pass. We'll move next to Oliver.
I'm Oliver Rackham. I'm a consultant on the neonatal unit at Arrow Park Hospital in the Wirral.
Hi, welcome. David?
Hello there. I'm David Tuttle, one of the general paediatricians down in Cardiff with an interest in medication safety.
And Yinsen?
Hello. I'm a consultant PhD. I'm a consultant nephrologist up in Newcastle, and I'm also the college lead for quality improvement and patient safety.
Brilliant. Lovely to hear from you, Yinsen. Who else have we? Anyone else out there who hasn't? Joanna. So I can see on the list a couple of extra names, Jane. I don't know if you can see the list too.
Thanks for that. I'm sorry I couldn't get a computer that was available in a quiet area, so apologies I can't see the slides.
Anybody else who has anyone who hasn't introduced themselves?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yep.
Hi, this is Brian Cleary. I'm Chief Pharmacist in the Rotunda Hospital in Dublin.
Brilliant.
Welcome.
Two simultaneous calls about electronic health records, so sorry, I just popped back in.
Amazing.
Jane, hi.
Great, and anybody else?
This is David Terry here.
Oh, hi.
Two Davids on the call. So I'm Dave Terry. I'm a pharmacist working at Aston University and for Birmingham Children's Hospital, where I run the academic practice unit. And sitting by my side is my colleague, Dr. Chi Hun, who's also a pharmacist researcher that's been helping us with the survey.
Brilliant. Anybody else who's dialed in? Is that a hello, I heard? Okay, great. So see a few people might join us. But I think we'll get started, because apologies again, the link that Cash was sent by IT had expired, so that's why we're starting a bit late. The main things on the agenda, so we're really lucky that Chris Kelly was able to give us a quick presentation about Neonate, which, for those of you who don't know, is a fantastic neonatal emergency drug calculator. And what's been really a really positive step from MedSciQ was actually to think a bit more about the use of apps, and hopefully he'll talk a bit more about some of the work he's done through our MedSciQ kind of work. Before we get to the last item on the agenda, I'm going to bring it right to the beginning and just plug it as many times as I can, that we're helping to organise an RT-PCH event called Safer in Our Hands, which is a QI patient safety conference on the 7th of July. So it'd be fantastic if you could spread the word in your networks. We've got a really great program with some plenary speakers and some workshops, including one related to MedSciQ. And it's a collaboration really between the SAFE program and MedSciQ. And so please sign up. There's workshops on QI education as well, so spread the word amongst those in your organization. Once again, I mean, I take it you're all registered as champions, but spread the word about our website and about registering, and becoming champions. So all of that, it's all got to be led from us as a network. So please do what you can. Anyway, I will hand over to Chris. So Chris is going to talk a bit about his work developing Mirmate, and hopefully we can have a bit of a discussion, share some other experiences, ideas, and about the challenges and benefits to apps use to improve medication safety. So over to you, Chris.
Okay. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. So I was just going to ask to talk maybe five, ten minutes about my experience making this app called Neomate, and then to talk about the RCPH working group that we've been working on and the survey that we're hoping you're going to help us promote to everyone in your hospitals. So just to start about Neomate, so if I can make the slides work. There we go. So here's Neomate. So Neomate's an app for Dobson nurses who are looking after sick newborn babies. And the idea came during a particularly stressful night shift as an ST1 where a baby became very sick very suddenly at 4 in the morning. And we called the transport team who came quickly and transferred the baby, and the baby actually ended up having congenital heart disease and surgery. But during that interim period before the transport team arrived, I was surprised at how badly our team's performance deteriorated under the stress of this bad situation. As the ST1, I'd been asked to prescribe a number of things, including a prostin infusion. And under the strain of that situation, I found this confusingly and like frustratingly difficult. And equally, the nurse who checked it afterwards had similar issues. And we ended up with a conference of several people at the nurse's station working through these calculations together multiple times. And it really wasn't ideal. And so while ruminating about this experience with my colleagues afterwards, it turned out they'd all had the same situation at some point in their careers. And they'd all had difficulties or made silly prescribing errors and stressful situations. And so that they wouldn't normally have made. So the idea for the app was I'd have an app in my pocket which I could refer to in a stressful situation and would have everything that I might potentially forget in these situations presented in a nice, concise way. So I started really just for myself, more than anything else, trying to make an app with key things I might need. It took a few months to build, and I spent 6 months testing it myself over the next 6 months or so. And during that period, I actually had another really bad delivery, again in the middle of the night, which seems to be always the case. And I couldn't remember a drug dose. I got the app out and used it, and I found this really reassuring, actually. And that's sort of spurred me to keep going with all this. So I gave the app to a few friends to test. It ended up releasing it on Android in 2013 in the summertime. And it did quite well, but Apple refused to accept it. They said that only universities, hospitals, and drug companies could upload drug calculator apps. So it's very frustrating, and I actually appealed many times. Actually, this turned out to be the very best thing for the app, because I then approached the London Neonatal Transfer Service, who are the specialist ambulance service in the southeast, who's the guidelines I'd pinched at the beginning to base the app upon. And they were really enthusiastic and agreed to help me develop it further. And so we started this period of rigorous testing and checking, which I had done myself, but I was amazed at the difference a team makes. And we had two really excellent neonatal pharmacists who spent a number of months checking every calculation, clarifying the wording, adding concentration limits, removing as many decimal places as possible, removing one necessary wording. It's like, it's amazing the insight they have into the sources of prescribing errors and drug preparation and administration. I added some machine unit testing, which is a way of the app of checking itself. We formed a little group of junior doctors and registrars, nurses and consultants to test the app in the real world before we released it. And we also made some checklists inspired by sort of the big man Atul Gawande, with some concise checklists of key information, which things as he put it, you know, that even trained professionals could miss, so that we popped them in as well into the app. And we registered the app as a Class 4 medical device, and finally managed to get over these various institutional and legal and logistical difficulties by February 2015, so it's almost 2 years after the original version was released. And it's done okay since then. So we've had something like 30,000 downloads in about 160 countries. It won an innovation prize in NHS last year, and we're sort of excited about developing it all in the future, really. And I think one thing I want to say is that I think one reason why it might have been adopted surprisingly widely is that it's sort of been designed and sort of refined by the person who had that original problem. It means it really sort of focuses on the things that matter, and the interface is designed for the context in which it's intended, so, you know, speed and preciseness and clarity rather than anything else. And I was just, you know, working with other hospital systems over the last few years, and particularly prescribing systems more recently, it just really seems that often the designers of these systems have never actually had to use it themselves in a busy clinical environment, and I think that's something we could try and change for the future anyway. So just following on from that last point about using the right people to design systems, the RCPH has formed a working group. So the objective is to ask GA doctors and nurses and pharmacists and consultants about the prescribing tools they already use in their daily practice and what they find helpful, what limitations they have, and if there's anything that they feel that the college should be designing for the future. We've done this in a range of ways. So we have someone called Daniel Bloom, who's an RCPH fellow working with Cassia. He's done an appraisal of the current captives available. He's done some semi-structured interviews with app developers. We've run focus groups for junior doctors, pediatric nurses, consultants, and specialist pediatric pharmacists. And this is all leading on to a survey that I'm going to tell you more about in a minute. And the aim is just to, you know, is there something the college should address in terms of supporting existing or developing new prescribing tools in whatever form that might take? Where are we up to? So from our focus groups, there are some early findings, but obviously this is before the main results, but obviously prescribing apps and support tools are widely used in all clinical settings. There's a high level demand for these apps. Most agree that they are useful in certain situations. There's also concern amongst the people that they or others might become over-reliant on such tools, and they might lose key skills that previous generations in the pre-smartphone era or pre-Excel era learned properly from first principles. And also the quality of these tools varies, you know, with variable citations of evidence, the backup recommendations, issues of keeping apps and tools up to date, lack of trustworthy certification available to give confidence to doctors and nurses and pharmacists when they're picking these apps. And the focus groups have only sampled a very small subset of the community who are involved in prescribing and administering medicines for children. And so we've made this survey, which we really want as many people to fill in as possible. It really only takes 5 minutes, and we'd love to hear your views on what prescribing tools you already use and your thoughts about how this area should develop in the future. Anyway, I hope you find that slightly interesting, and thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Do you want to say a bit more about the getting it through the MHRA as a medical device? Because I know that's been much debated and discussed with other groups previously.
Yes. I'm not sure about that much about the utility of this certification process, really. I rung the MHRA a few times, and each time I couldn't get through to anyone who really understood the process themselves, which I found difficult. This is back in 2013. It may have changed now, but there was very little advice about what one should do, and they just gave me some general advice about self-certifying. So the medical apps generally fall under a class one certification, which is pretty much anything that does a calculation or gives a recommendation. And drug calculators are definitely within that remit, so they would consider that need to be registered as a class one device. But it is a self-certification process. And there's very little guidance about how one should self-certify unless you employ some very expensive companies who have more experience in this. So I went through the European legislation and did it as best as I could. And I think, I mean, the general principles is that you are creating a tool that has been well thought out, well planned, has good governance procedures in place, you know, good principles of software design, good principles of checking, it's a version control, checking, various levels of checking, so testing in a closed group and then open testing, and also methods of having feedback, you know, in the wild so people can feedback errors or problems that they have. And, you know, so we've done that very comprehensively, but I feel that there could be much better guidance available online to people who might be thinking the same thing as me.
So you kind of put together your... Was it a matter of filling out a form with all this information and then coming back to you and approving? Is that how it works?
Yes, but they don't. I'm not necessarily sure that anyone on the other end necessarily.
They don't.
Someone can come and say, "Well, I see you have self-certified as a clinical device. I'd like to see your evidence behind this."
Right. So, yeah.
And I suppose that is. You know, it's a bit like doing your sort of tax return or something. You know, they're going to pick out certain people to investigate very carefully. So there is obviously a huge risk of putting a CE mark on something if you haven't done everything properly. So within the constraints of it being a new field and the people at the MHRA themselves weren't entirely sure how much depth you needed to go into. I went for a medium approach, but I know others who've done far more comprehensive and far less comprehensive. So sort of I'm sure it will get clearer in the coming 6 months to a year or something. I know there are working groups making better guideline studies, sort of thing.
Mm. Thanks. Great. Can I ask?
Does anyone? Yeah.
It's Alice. Just a question that obviously, particularly if the college is getting behind these apps, is the challenge of the standardised approach and standardised infusions and standardised doses. How have you managed with that? Because certainly when I last did neonates, not every hospital used the same drugs.
That's true. True. I mean, I started with what the London NTS did, which I figured was a good starting point, because when I was doing my SD1 job, we'd often make things up in our standardised, in our hospital style, which was often, say, half a mil per hour in infusion or something like that. And then the NTS team would arrive and they'd want to remake everything in 4 mil per hour, because that was their standard for transport. And so I thought if we just started off with NTS style, because obviously these babies in level 2 units are probably going to end up being transferred, we'd actually end up saving a lot of money on remaking drug infusions just to fit in with the way the ambulance service was going to pick them up, was going to require them. So I started off in that sense, but you can click on every drug and change the, there are sliders, you can change the kind of concentrations and volumes, whatever you want. But it starts off with the NTS guidelines. And I do think that probably we should be able to standardize these things, because if you're going to intubate a baby, I can't see why at a hospital half a kilometre away you give a double the dose or something. I mean, surely we could all agree on something. So the app might be a sort of covert way of doing that, maybe.
I think I think that is a really good point that, it's one of the kinds of things that this is one of the discussions we've had quite a lot through MedsIQ, and is happening in the MIST collaborative as well. And it may be that just actually pragmatically, if you make it so that the people on the ground are all following a particular standardised approach, it may provide some of the pressure to have a larger scale standardisation.
Yeah, it might be a way of doing it without people really realising, which
yeah,
might
exactly.
be a good
thing. That sounds good.
As long as it's correct, then that's fine.
Well, yeah.
There was a discussion 2 years... Sorry. There was a discussion 2 years ago when the MIST Collaborative was first developing about standardised infusions, an amazing study produced by the South Thames Retrieval Service with obviously paediatrics, the PQ day, infusions that actually reduced transfer time.
Yeah, that would make sense, because you then have to re-describe it, remake it, and then it delays everything, doesn't it? So if you start off in the style that they're looking for, then that
saves
the end time.
Great if... that was another output of MedsIQ in the future. But let's open this up to everybody else. Any questions to Chris about either the development of Neomate, any of the challenges, benefits, or the, or perhaps a bit more about the working group? Because I know there's some people on the line who've been involved in that as well. Any comments or questions?
David Terry here. First of all, Chris, many congratulations on what you've done with this. Fantastic. Have a well-earned round of applause or a pat on the back. It's really very well done. Thanks for that. And thanks for sharing today. I've got a couple of questions, really. I was wondering what your plan is, or what's the strategy for keeping it up to date?
We have this little group now of, nurses, doctors, registrars, and the pharmacists who, we're actually meeting tomorrow actually to have a look at what we're going to do next. And then we'll go through the same iterative process again. So we'll, we'll put it out to the small testing group, and then we'll eventually release it again. But the plans are to, keep it regularly up to date, and there's lots of other plans, particularly around the surprising thing that it's quite popular in countries outside the UK, and you feel like there might be an opportunity to help improve pediatric prescribing in sort of lower resource countries as well. So I think definitely Saeed, one of the initial consultants at the transport service, is quite interested in putting some a little bit more about about guidelines and emergency procedures and things in there as well, just to help people who might have less access to a proper healthcare system like we do here. But we're definitely on an ongoing, it's definitely a rolling process, and there's lots of plans for the future.
I'm just wondering if you had any circumstances where doses have changed, NICE guidance has come out, something where you need to take sort of urgent action to make sure that it's up to date and not causing a potential problem.
I mean, it's hosted by the. Yeah, I mean, officially hosted by the Neonatal Transport Service, which is based at the Royal London Hospital in London. So, really, the clinical expertise comes from them in terms of if there was some urgent thing that needs to be updated, we could do that very quickly. But we get quite a lot of feedback from people, so we always respond to that. And if people have suggestions and things, we add it to a list of potential changes, and we go through them. So. I think we're just relying on the, again, like they would in the Neonatal Transport Service, if something changed, they would update all their guidelines accordingly, and the hospital too, really. So it's just and good not being a lone wolf, I suppose, and that there's a big team behind it, and I think that's the most helpful thing.
It seems to me that that's a very useful model. You have an organisation behind it that is in the business, as it were, and yeah. Yeah. Going to update themselves and update this as part of what they do.
Yeah, definitely.
Chris, have there been discussions with other transport services, or I mean, has anything more come from the working group in terms of using Neomate more widely?
It hasn't really actually. Someone did talk about making a Piku version of it, but we haven't got any further with that so far. But I'm surprised actually. There hasn't been other. The NTS might have had more conversation with their colleagues' service, their neighbouring services, but there hasn't been any requests to make a specialist. One of my worries was we might end up with people wanting to make their own regional versions of it, which seems to kind of remove the point of having one. But luckily, that hasn't really come.
There is an app, isn't there, for the South Thames Retrieval Service?
Yes, there is. It's more about PICU, isn't it? Yeah, which is.
You just mentioned doing a PICU version. So
yeah,
just wondering if the working group had sort of engaged with them.
PICU. Oh,
not so much.
Hello. Last week, I attended the MISS meeting, and then MISS is actually mainly made up of PICU people, and they were very keen on a standardizing fusion. So I think we won't have too difficult time selling to the MISS community.
The STRS has been around for many years now. I'm not sure it's changed that much in that time, but it has. And he was first calculator app for PICU, and I've seen more as well. I think the neonatal side is less well served, and not. I guess it's just. I don't know. There aren't fewer patients. I'm not sure why, but maybe the PICU consultants are more into this sort of thing. But the NICU side is quite underserved. In America as well, there are lots of PICU startups. It'd be nice if they could all work together and standardise a PICU form of this.
Yeah, that would be a big aspiration.
All right, Chris, can I just say again, just to echo, well done on getting that done, and it's excellent. To have managed to get that through and launched. I have got a couple of sort of comments that will seem negative, but they're only because there's so many positive things. I don't need to list them all. I think we can all see those. It's more than just standardised infusion. So that is a group that is being set up separately to look at that. Can we standardise? So we've done that across our regional network, but that's where I can see we could have a project to come up with. If you're going to make this drug, make it in this way because it's safe and it's easy to administer if you do that. This isn't just trying to do that. This is trying to have a guideline which then every unit is going to follow. And I think that's, at a national level, I think we're quite a few steps away from doing that, because although you've got this for a region, we're very far from having national guidelines on many of these things.
Yeah.
And my concern would be that then people will, which will they follow? Will they follow NearMate because it looks nice, it works quickly, and it's on their smartphone, or should they use their hospital guideline, which may well be different? So that, along with David's point about is it really up to date, or has something else come in different? Those are my main two issues about it being used outside of your region. So yeah. it's quite similar to within the Northwest. There's a, like you said, the pediatric. It's not an app, but it's a spreadsheet, and that's used and it's very popular. Yeah. So it wouldn't be imposed or not imposed. It wouldn't be used or useful to anyone outside of the region.
Yeah, although I guess they could, but yeah. They'd
be using a different guideline to their hospital and their neighbouring hospital.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose ideally, if the output from that group was some really good recommendations that that made sense to everyone, and then we would change the app, I suppose. I mean,
that would be great around how you make an infusion, and that certainly improved our work and reduced risk and infusion. But this goes beyond that in trying to say this is how you do something, this is what you should choose, and this is the guideline, which is a little bit of a more tricky question to answer.
I sort of agree, but I also disagree. If you actually look at NearMate, it's more about checklists, so reminders and prompts. It's less about local guidelines. So,
but it's a reminder of what the guideline is there, not the guideline somewhere else.
They're general principles that anyone should apply to management of a sick neonate. If you have a good look at the app, the experience I've had of using it, it doesn't replace local guidelines by any means. I would still refer to my local guidelines and policies. But these are extra checklists of things. Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? Which are principles relevant to the stabilisation of any sick neonate. I'd strongly suggest you have a look through them rather, I suppose the other argument, which with a QI hat on, is shouldn't we be standardising and practice and improving quality
on a national level,
which I agree is a way off. But I don't think neonate is quite, I think it's a bit different to that actually, which I think is why it is so widespread in its use and its popularity.
So that's all great, and again, I'm not being critical of it at all, I'm just pointing out some of the things. So we would say all of those things we would hope would be in our list, in our guideline already. So this is how you make it, this is what it doesn't run with, you should round it to this dose, don't prescribe a dose that you can't administer. So we would say that should be in our guideline. It would be great if our guideline was in an app. And I think the next stage would be to get some national standardisation of those things. I completely agree, and hopefully that's what Meds IQ is all about.
Yeah, no,
can I just David here from Cardiff. I wonder if I could perhaps suggest something here that might help us go forward. I sit on the BNFC, and at the moment I'm currently the sort of locum chairman of the Paediatric Formulary Committee. One of the things I brought up with Karen Baxter, the sort of lead pharmacist writing the BNFC, was about some standardised fragments. One was recently was about, Ceftriaxone. What volume should we put Ceftriaxone in to give an IM injection or whatever? And I've asked them to do a bit of work on that. It struck me, listening to what you're saying, is whether in terms of, legal responsibility, funding for future things, updating the drug doses, et cetera, that should sit very comfortably with some sort of engagement with BNF, I would have suggested. And it might be worth having that discussion, whether there's a way of linking them in or because I think I'm not a neonatologist, but I'm absolutely up for using the best and one sort of one solution to the drug doses and strengths all across the country. And I think that's something that BNF might be quite receptive to now it's been taken over by NICE. Just a thought.
Just a
But I think I'm just picking that point up. I know there's been discussion in the past about whether BNSC is actually going to bring out its own app. I mean, there's the app that just is the BNF, but a slightly more, you know, one that isn't just the scrollable.
I think they're very much in looking to develop it and wanting feedback. And I spoke with Karen about 2 weeks ago, and just asking what do you do to get feedback. And she said they've got user groups they have in London, and take them off to BMA House where they get them to play with the app and just take their feedback from them directly, as well as online feedback that they get. But I think they're very receptive to developing this in a way that works. And just as Chris was saying, you know, what do you want to do at 2 in the morning when you get this child? And the more user-friendly it is, and when I say didactic, I don't mean to take away, you know, you're talking about local regional units having decisions about what they do for RDS babies or whatever, but having a reasonably standardized, you know, we give 1 milligrams of morphine or whatever it is to a 1 kilo baby, or, you know, whatever you want to say in a set way, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be able to develop that and push it. That's very naive, of course, to think it can be done so quickly, but I don't see why we're fortunate in Britain having an NHS, albeit in the devolved countries, it's got, you know, its own connotations, but I think BNFC is used widely. And you mentioned, Chris, about the international take-up. That doesn't surprise me. Funny, a mate of mine works out in New Zealand, Mike Houston's written something similar, I think, over there. But with the Medicines for Children hat, which I also sort of assist with, I think it's a third or a quarter of our hits are international hits, not within UK addresses.
That's really interesting. Do you think this is something that, I mean, how do we best proceed with this? Is something you could take to your next meeting?
Yeah, I think what would be helpful maybe is if I send an email to Karen today and should I copy it to Kasia and then she can sort of see what their response is, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, it'd be great to take it forward from SIQ. It'd be fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, maybe it'll fall flat on its face, I don't know, but I hope not. They would then need to consider what, you know, BNFC does have a huge process of looking at the evidence and all that sort of stuff. And obviously, as you know, sometimes in medicines, there isn't a lot of evidence for what we do in paediatric age groups. But it's trying now even to acknowledge that and put various sort of levels of evidence in the next, I think it's the next version of the BNFC will have that to guide you on saying, oh, he is great, there's randomized studies, or this is an expert opinion, and it might be or might not be the right dose. So that it's becoming more involved and hopefully responsive to the users.
And hopefully will help standardise practice as well, as you say.
Yeah, and yes, because I've just given the example of the conversation I had with Karen, because it struck me that, you know, everyone must be mixing blooming ceftriaxone up in different strengths, and we just want to do it one way that's the best. And let's have a little bit of work now to get it sorted out. And I think BNFC should be guiding people to that. Your thing is the next step along the line, isn't it, about more complicated neonatal infusions and strengths. But it's part of the same sort of ethos, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, it might be useful. So, you know, if Chris is up for it, for Chris to be put in touch with the working group around the BNFC app as well, if that would be something you could facilitate.
Would it be possible, Kasia, for you to send me Chris's email?
Yes, absolutely.
Or Chris to send it to you. And then perhaps what if I send to Kasia, Chris and myself, and then perhaps a phone call at some future date, and it may be Karen says, look, let's explore that and see where it takes us. I probably shouldn't say much more now, because it'll be sort of, you know, hypothesizing on what she may or may not say, and, you know, let's get a feedback from her first of all before we try and dance away saying we're going to have a BNF app that links in with this and does this, and, you know.
Yeah, but it'd be worth pursuing,
it is, and I think us looking with the RCVCH on a national basis is really good.
That's great.
Any final questions or comments? Because we should probably move on with the agenda otherwise. Has anyone got anything else they wanted to bring up?
Can I ask a quick query? This is Brian Cleary from the Rotunda Hospital in Dublin. Just to kind of briefly set the scene, we have a national EHR project, maternal and newborn clinical management system. Cork University Maternity Hospital is the first site going live this October. So we've done a lot of work around order sentences, dose range checking within a Cerner build. An issue that we're coming up against are the legacy IT systems that are there in the existing hospitals around CN prescribing and around some things like automatic generation infusion labels. And with the Medical Device Directive, you know, we're hitting this issue of engaging the regulator, getting them CE marked. So it was just to see what was Chris's experience of engaging the MHRA like. Were they up for this? Had they the staff to do it? What level of proof did they need? What level of validation did they need to give their approval for the final product?
I think, like I was saying before, it really wasn't the best experience. I mean, I think maybe I rung them quite early on, but they didn't have anyone particularly who could help me in a sort of specific way. I was expecting to get in contact with them, and they would give me a nice checklist of what I needed to do and who I should send to what, and exactly all that stuff. But in the end, I didn't manage to get that from them. And I think there is more coming soon. I have spoken to someone who's involved in a sort of a working group similar to this that is looking at how to give guidelines for the development of medical apps and the sort of the minimum standards that need to be hit. But I think that is not yet finished. So in the meantime, I haven't got any very good advice for you other than that I just... there are some European documents that you can go through that give out the sort of you have to do a declaration of conformity, and they give all the sort of standards that you should try and adhere to. And I just really went through that, but I don't have enough experience to give a really clear answer about that. But hopefully there'll be more guidance coming.
CE mark, was that a separate process then?
No. This is for the CE mark. So you do a declaration of conformity to say that you adhere to the standards that are required for a class one device. But the MHRA doesn't, because it's a self-certification process, the MHRA doesn't actually read it themselves unless they choose to pick you out for an investigation, I suppose. And you know, whereas class, I can't remember exactly the majority of medical devices are, you have to go through a process where they review all your documentation and then give you a CE mark. Once you submit your documentation to them, you can start using the mark in a class one device, which is because it's a self-certification process. So it's quite grey, the amount of detail that you need to go into, unfortunately.
That's something we're finding with the electronic health record, where we're building in things like dose range checking, and we've got a PN calculator as part of that.
Where does
the EHR end and the medical device begin? And, you know, do you need to go and get that CE marked? Because vendor has specific aspects of their system CE marked, but not the clinical decision support for prescribing. So.
And even this calculator we were hearing about on the Excel calculator for the region, that officially isn't CE marked because it's a calculator that's been used for guiding doses of, you know, I mean, you really should be seeing CE marking a huge amount of things that we use in the hospital if you adhere to it completely rigidly. So I mean, they do need to really improve the guidance, I think.
Maybe this is something else that we could, you know, from MedsIQ, we've got to contact the MHRA who came up to our expert advisory groups. It might be something positive we could feedback. I'm sure we've had some of these discussions already. I think I remember some conversations. I'm going to have to move on, I'm afraid, just because of time. I know we'll have to leave at 2. Sorry, was that someone talking?
Oliver again, sorry, because I do have to go to. I've just got a plea to Chris as well before this is rolled out, which I'm sure it is going to be, because my other big interest is over patient and user involvement, and there is a national parent peer support group which is called Nearmates. So I'm just a little bit from.
I saw that on Twitter last week, actually.
I know you've already gone so far down the line with this. But we then got Nearmates, which is the parents, which is who we're all here for, along with the babies. And then we've got Nearmate.
Yeah. I know, they've got an S on there, haven't they? Which is lucky there's a slight difference. But
there is a slight difference, but it's a little plea for us to think about that before we roll it out any wider.
Okay, thank you. I'm sure if anyone else wants to contact Chris's emails on our on the invite for the call. So if that's all right, Chris, if anyone could maybe get in touch by email, and anything that you think MedSciQ can help with, just copy us in and we can see what we can take forward. I want to talk now a bit about our MedSciQ activity planning going forward. So obviously, as a network, MedSciQ, we're really keen to hear from you guys as champions and to help us plan upcoming activities. Specific things I could ask you to pledge as champions. So by the end of next week, if you could make sure that any of the resources, tools or projects that you're aware of, perhaps, you know, get your colleagues to upload to the website, or go away and get at least two people to register on the website and have a look, that would be a fantastic effort from you. So we'd really appreciate that. We'd also like to think a bit about the bulletin. So I don't know how many people, you know, have actually, how much you've engaged with and read the bulletin. What we're trying to do now is to think about themes going forward. I don't know if you want to say anything at this point, Kasia, or if anybody, you know, if there's anything, and likewise with our webinars, you know, it's been great having Chris today, and it's generated a really interesting discussion. I think these are all really crucial parts of our network and our kind of informing policy that we can move forward with as MedSciQ as part of the college. So, you know, if people have topic ideas, content for the bulletin, any sort of interesting news to share with the network, you know, and any thoughts or comments now would be great. Complete silence.
No,
any thoughts, anything?
This is Brian here in the Rotunda in Dublin. We've a neonatal research pharmacist who's been doing a medication safety QI program for the past year, and you know, we've a bundle of interventions that we've been implementing, but things like the European Medical Device Directive make us a little bit nervous around, you know, sharing that content before we've gone through a process like Chris has already. So, you know, the very specific legislation there around distributing or supplying what's classified as a medical device. So, like, it's tricky right now to share IT-based health interventions because of the European Medical Device Directive until people start to get through that grayness of the regulators and the interpretation of the European Directive.
Mm.
I don't know if anyone is getting up against that kind of problem.
Kima, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to go too, so I'm going to sign off now and wish you all the best, and I'll be in touch to Karen and Chris. Thanks ever so much.
Great, and do come to the Safe in Our Hands conference if you can, 7th of July.
Okay.
For the details on the RCTCH website. Thank you.
Thanks.
See you there. Bye, bye.
Can I...
So going back to that point, any comments or thoughts?
Well, if I can just jump in very quickly. Thanks for that update, Brian, and I completely understand the concerns. I think it's worth noting that you know, while probably you know, on the resource section of MedSciQ, you know, we would need those that whole process to be complete in order to post the resource. But the purpose of the bulletin really is just to make it more an informal sharing and communication space. So even if you wanted to send just a few lines, just saying that this is a piece of work that you've been doing, you know, then I think it'd be just worth knowing for others if they wanted to get in touch and maybe find out more, or maybe they're doing something similar. So I think that you know, we would really love for the bulletin to be a communication channel, so almost like a written version of the web meeting, you know, so any kind of ideas, I mean, even a couple of lines just saying, you know, what you've been doing, and obviously if this is something that you would like to put out to the other champions and maybe invite their perspective or, you know, or involvement, that's perfect. And we don't need anything else.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it doesn't have to be a detailed piece or the exact, you know, tools and et cetera that you're using. So through the bulletin or even discussion at webinars, it's a really useful way of just sharing what's going on, as Kasia said.
Great, thank you.
Hello. I mean, one thing I thought of is actually whether it would be useful to actually invite people who actually publish what they have done on medication errors, and actually or medication kind of improvement projects. Because actually now there are several avenues for people to actually publicize what they've done, and I think one thing is that people may want to hold back some of the projects to be published in a peer review journal, and if it happens, whether we should go out to people who've actually published already and actually ask them, we can put a link in MedSciQ and them to write a brief couple of paragraphs and then link it to their paper.
Yeah, great idea. I mean, right at the beginning, actually, we started doing that sort of approach of a literature review. I think what would be really great, as you say, is maybe this would be something more relevant to the news bulletin. You know, we could maybe think about, you know, choosing, well, we already have the idea of having some themes or topics. So perhaps something, or if, you know, if people want to do or have done a mini literature review, they want to write for our bulletin, you know, just a few paragraphs and some links. That would be another kind of approach, I guess. And any other thoughts on the bulletin or webinars? Any topics that people think would be raised an interesting discussion, or things that they're struggling with, or anything else you want to say, Cash, about upcoming activity?
No, just to say that, you know, just a quick call for action. So anything that you might want to share, if you could send it to me by the end of this week, because we will be releasing the next bulletin next week. So like I said, it can be very informal, just a few lines. It doesn't have to be a big piece or, you know, a complete process description. Just a liner will do. So if you could send me anything that you would like to share with other champions by the end of this week, that'd be great.
Any other thoughts or comments? I'm very aware it's 2. We did start late, but sorry. Maybe that was just an echo, I was guessing. I'm very aware we did start late. I'm really grateful. I know a lot of people have had to leave already. Once again, Safer in Our Hands conference on the 7th of July. Does anyone else have anything else you wanted to bring up? Any other business? Anything from you, Alice? Okay. Anything else, Kasia, you wanted to bring up?
No, I'll just, if that's okay with everyone, as a follow-up to this, I will send out the link to Safer in Our Hands conference, just for, you know, people who would like to see the program and some information about the speakers. We have a really fantastic program, so I'm sure you'll find it interesting. And also, if it's not too much to ask, we have a MedSciQ evaluation survey that we're also asking champions and users to complete, just to help us, you know, improve the website in the future. So I will be sending that out as well. So you'll get it as a follow-up email to today. And the recording from today will also be circulated in the next bulletin.
Brilliant. Thanks, Kasia. Well, thanks, everybody, for dialing in. And as I said, do get in touch. You've all got Kasia's email, but obviously you can contact us through the website and spread the word about MedSciQ. Many thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.